This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This episode is again brought to you by our sponsor, ThePerfectTrick.com. If you're going to be buying any magic, and surely you are sometime, and you're going to be buying it from an online supplier, please check out ThePerfectTrick.com, where you can purchase a variety of things. They have over 15,000 items that are available, and also some things that are quite interesting because they buy and sell new and used magic also. So if you have some gently used magic that you'd like to turn into cash before the holidays, you might want to contact Eric Citron over at ThePerfectTrick.com and let him know what it is that you've got, and he can let you know what it's worth, and perhaps if it's some sort of a collectible, then he might be interested in purchasing that from you. And if you are a collector yourself, you might want to check it out and see what kinds of interesting things that he has, because he acquires new things all the time. So go check him out over at ThePerfectTrick.com. And please support our sponsor, because that's what helps keep the magic word going, as well as your donations and your pledges. So we thank each and every one of the friends of the magic word, and all the listeners too. Thanks very much for tuning in. Well, speaking of tuning in, this week, this is the third and final of our Halloween or October specials, I guess. We've had a couple of things that had to do with kind of a Halloween-ish theme, if you will, a little bit different in talking about seances the first week with Paul Voudini, and then we talked about cold reading for corporate clients with Dave Arch, which was a completely different kind of thing. Well, today we're going to be talking with Doc Hilford about seances and the spiritualism movement that is going on around the world. It's spiritualism religion, as well as disclaimers for mentalists. We're going to be talking about some dark seances and just a whole variety of things. Golly, you know, when we start into a conversation with Doc Hilford, that he really dives deep into some really great stuff. And we really kind of scratch the surface on a few things. And towards the end of this podcast, there are some other areas we can go into. And so perhaps in future podcasts that we'll get back together with Doc and explore some of those other ideas. But you're going to learn a lot, I know, from this podcast. And if you're like me, you want to go back and listen to this then another time after you've heard it the first time. Digest that, go back and listen again, because there'll be some more nuances I think you'll pick up on the second listening. And so with that, I want to also recommend that you sign up for our newsletter, because I make some recommendations as to some podcasts in our archives that you may have missed or want to go back and listen to a second time, because I am recommending certain podcasts that have some real gems in them that may have been overlooked that you need to go back and listen to, as well as telling you who is in the current podcast and who's going to be coming up for the next week. So with that being said, please welcome my guest this week, Doc Hilford, here on The Magic Word. Ladies and gentlemen, I am excited here today about having a guest and a longtime friend of mine, and someone who is not as well known in the magic fraternity, but is in the mentalist community. And, you know, whenever that I go to the Mindvention and post the daily updates, that's one of the more popular conventions that people like to hear about, which is interesting because they don't have but about 100 registrants. It seems like that they go to it. But it's like, you know, I don't want to go, but I want to find out what was there. And I have more downloads of that.
Really?
Yeah, of that convention than any other convention. And year after year, I mean, the analytics show that they go back still and listen. So there is a real interest on that. Anyhow, before I go on, let me just say from Miami, Florida, please welcome Doc Hilford. Hey, Doc.
Thanks, Scott. Great to be here. It's great to see you. It really is. I was so happy to see you here. You surprised me in the hall. But I should have guessed you'd be here, right?
That's right, yes.
I'm sorry. I should have known.
Known I'm here. That's right. As a mentalist, that's right, and a mind reader. You know, I had a...
That joke never gets old.
That's right. for mentalists. It does for the audience.
Right. It does. I only hear it three times a day.
You know, I had... in talking about that some years ago we had a roast for at the Mindvention for Bob Cassidy, you know, rest his soul. There was a guy who was, it was, you know, one of the best shows that I remember at the Mindvention was where we had three generations. You know, we had Colin McLeod, and then we had Banachek and Bob Cassidy, you know, and I thought,
you know, I'm watching greatness right here, you know, that it was just different generations and how that they perform and what their perception was. You remember that?
I don't think I was at that one.
Okay.
But I know all three of them really well.
Oh, yeah, of course you do. Of course.
But I still talk to Bob.
But
through a spirit trumpet.
Through a spirit trumpet. Is that a dark seance, I guess, that you do this? You know, Jamie and I do, but I was going to say that there was a roast that you, and you were involved with the roast now.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
definitely, because that was the one that John Stinson, I think, was hosting.
No, I did the roast. And
with Michael Wepper and Jeff, or Jeff.
Well, Jeff is still angry at us for picking on him.
Boy, he was the one that got roasted almost worse than anybody. Well, made fun of him.
But he said, here's the thing, and can I jump in? I was talking to John Archer here about this. All right, so last night, did you see the midnight?
That's the one thing I missed. And by the way, that as we were recording this is being recorded while we're in Houston at the Texas Association of Magicians. And you can go back and listen to the podcast as far as what we did on the daily updates and everything. But I have been getting only like about 3 hours of sleep because I've been going back and putting up these podcasts.
Poor guy.
And so I had left after Shane Cobalt's lecture. And because right after that, they were going to do the Midnight Madness. And then everybody said, oh, did you go last night? So, of course I missed it, you know.
Well,
so tell
me. What was great. Was there were high points, and the high points were the old professional guys, Michael Wepper and John Archer. But what's funny is when John Archer's performing and Michael Wepper goes out and gets the vacuum cleaner,
I've heard about this.
And then comes in and vacuums, and then John has to make he makes a comment about at last he found his true vocation. And then the really funny stuff happened backstage that nobody got to hear because Michael said, it took me a long time to find something that sucked worse than the guy that was on stage. And the reason I bring it up is I was talking to John about that tonight.
John Archer.
Yeah, John Archer. That seasoned performers, that's really how we show love, is to razz and stab
kind
and knock.
Somebody and, else, sure.
And if you get that from another performer...
It's the highest form of praise.
It is. If it's, you know, if you know it's done sincerely.
Sure,
and you know.
Or tongue-in-cheek, I should say. Yeah.
But, and a lot of that we were including, because if you remember, all the guys that were on the roast were all like workers.
Yes.
It was Michael Wepper and John Stetson and Ross Johnson and myself. But they were workers.
Right.
And we kind of included Jehef into it because they said really terrible mean things about me too, which were great because it means you're part of the gang.
Yeah.
And so we were trying to bring Jehef in. If you remember what happened is he got up and he started instead of roasting.
He was trying to be serious.
He was trying to be serious and do a tribute.
Roast, man.
So we all got up and left.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody did. I remember, were you the one that got them together? Say, let's just go.
No, Michael did. He'll deny that, so I shouldn't say that anyway. But what he did say is he says, commit to it. Commit to the bit. Because we'd head for the door. Everybody's laughing. A couple guys are going to go back. I remember Ken Wepper was like, okay, I'll go back to my seat. No. We got to go out the door.
Yeah.
Commit to the bit. That's what makes it funny, not just the...
You just don't get up and pretend like you're going to go.
Right. And the funny thing is poor Jehef, I think he thought that we really were being mean to him when the thing is that... Because he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Well, he was
the
one who
heart.
Wrote Cassidy's books.
Right.
And everything.
And took care of Bob. You know, I mean, he was friends with Bob. And,
right.
And,
actually, it was H&R, I think, was the ones who published their books.
Right, right.
Yeah, sorry.
But he's a teacher and a retired teacher and a part-time performer.
Yeah.
So he doesn't
He loved Bob, and he was trying to respect him by giving him
this tribute, right. This is a roast. This is a roast.
What
and
did
the
you
way
not
we do a roast.
Here, man?
Is we make, you know, we make fun of everything we can find. And it was, that was a great time. And I'm glad, that was a good idea. And I'm glad we got to kick Bob out that way, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, Bob did a lot. Back, if you go back, oh my goodness. They're so stiff. You know, mentalists are so stiff today.
You know, that's true.
But
and
back
I just...
in his day, that was... They had the PENIS was the newsletter. Gosh.
Well, there was the one, of course, that David Hoy had that was the Fellowship United Church of Knowledge or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that it was a little bit different, you know, back then. But, yeah, roast is kind of like, you know, the I was thinking of the Dean Martin roast, you know, where they have somebody they're making fun of, and you just kind of...
And other people on the diet.
On the diet, so,
Exactly. It was a blast. It was a blast. And you know, we loved Jeff. We loved Jeff.
Yeah. So. But anyhow, I did a chat with Bob Cassidy. He and I were working at the Magic Castle together one week, and he was in the palace or the parlor. I don't remember which. I was working close up, and... you know, went up to his room and we had a long chat. And anyhow, he was just a great guy always to talk with, and you know, full of knowledge. And some of the things we talked about, I remember on the podcast. It was one of those things that later, it's like I wish we would have sat down like you and I are to actually have a longer conversation. We actually had gone over to In-N-Out Burger, one of my favorite places, just a couple blocks from the castle, and came back with it, walked back with the burger, and we were sitting in his apartment. I said, "Let me just start recording something," and I did. And we talked about a half hour. But it was some interesting stuff in which we were talking about, for an example, the importance of disclaimers, you know, and it's always a big topic, you know, that whenever you're in a panel discussion or you know, a mentalist lecture, that someone always brings up that topic of, well, what is, you know, should you have a disclaimer or not? And everybody has a different opinion on that kind of a thing. And I guess
what do you think? What did he say?
Well, you know, I'll have to go back and listen to the podcast myself. So I think that he was saying that it's not necessary. I believe it's kind of like whenever that if you are an actor in a movie, you don't say, you know, that I'm Dustin Hoffman playing this part, by the way, that this is not really me. You just play it and people come, they know you're not, you know, a real person. Although... that whenever that you're performing, you're presenting it, no one knows you. It's not like you have several other roles that they can compare this, okay, that, you know, he's really not a cowboy, you know, and he's also really not a robber, or he's really not this loving lover type or whatever, you know, because he's had these different kinds of roles, because they can compare one with the other. They're just seeing you for the first time. And so if you go out and say, well, I don't, you know, I you know, this is I don't believe in giving disclaimers because actors don't. Well, yeah, but that's a little bit different. You know, so my opinion is I just do it and let the chips fall. You know, I feel as if that if you're going to be talking and presenting something, I think, you know, I remember now what we talked about. One thing was important was what powers do you try to make people feel that you have? You know, and or power, you know, I mean, is it everything? Or, you know, do you try to focus down? You know, I was doing a show here once in which I had done some predictions, and I was talking with my friend Jamie Salinas afterwards, and Jamie said, you know, that you probably, in looking back, you probably did 6 predictions, but they came out in different ways. I said, well, yeah, you know, and as I thought back, he was absolutely right. You know, one was in an envelope, another one was, you know, in different places that ultimately, you know, whatever I...
But
Right. Yeah, it would reveal, but my point is, at least I was showing that is the power that I have of being able to have this clairvoyance kind of, as opposed to psychokinesis or bending things, and I can do this and do that and predict. So my thing was I was able to have that power, you know. So anyhow, that was one of the things we talked about.
Magicians might do well to give that a thought. You know, I see a lot of magicians that, you know, never bad-mouthing, and I would say I see a lot of magicians who do know exactly what they're doing and they're focused. But then we see a wave of magicians who string tricks together that they really like. And then there's all kinds of different acts too, right? Certainly Shane is showing sleight of hand.
And Shane Cobalt.
Yeah. And he's saying this is great classic sleight of hand.
Right.
Instead of this is magic, and I, you know, my views have changed over the years, and I hope they change again. You know, I would say that.
What do you think now?
Before I used to, I tell you before, and then I'll tell you now. Before I used to think, if I go, my analogy was, if I go to a French restaurant and I'm buying French cuisine, it says French cuisine on the front of the building and on the menu.
You don't expect tacos.
I don't, nor do I expect, I don't care if it's a Mexican-American chef that prepares it. And I don't really care if it comes out of a can, as long as it tastes like French food. It looks like French food, smells like French cuisine. Mm-hmm. But I also don't expect the chef to come out and say, this really isn't authentic French food because I'm using canned escargot and, you right. know, and blah, blah,
oh, I
blah.
See what you're saying.
Right. So that sure. it for all practical purposes, it's French cuisine. For all practical purposes, when Banachek bends a fork, doesn't matter if he uses his hand, his thigh, or his mind, mm-hmm. as far as
the method
pragmatics go. It's at the end of the day, the fork is bent, right?
Okay.
If we're looking at things like from a Platonic view, right? A philosophic view, a Plato viewpoint of it isn't bent and then it is bent. We don't care really how it got to be bent. The fork's just bent. Mm-hmm. Now, if we tell the story that someone can use their mind, and I still don't really know what's supposed to happen when you bend a fork with your mind. But okay, so I always picture, like, you know, Aquaman with the bloop 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 bloop, those kind of waves coming out of
concentric circles coming out.
Yeah,
of it,
concentric circles, sonar.
Yeah,
bending the fork. But so he tells one story. Does it matter if he's telling? So I'm not going to bend it with my mind, but I tell you about Banachek. And while I tell you, I say he just holds the fork. And by looking at it, it bends like this. And I use my hand to bend it. And at the end of the day, the fork is still bent.
Right.
As far as entertainment, there's no difference. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, we don't see how he bends it. And he says he does it with his mind. I tell the same story about him using his mind and use my fingers. Now, as far as magic goes, right, as far as mysticism goes, right, there's no mysticism at all in me bending it with my hand. There right. can be, but in this scenario, there's not. And there is when we don't see the way he does it. Mm-hmm. So what I'm getting to is disclaimers and claims are going to vary in so many different degrees that there really can't be an answer that blankets all of us, mm-hmm. right? Today, I don't feel that... it used to be, to put it concisely, it used to be I didn't believe in any kind of disclaimer at all. Mm-hmm. That I just said, look, you know, I'm a mentalist. I guess I did a non-disclaimer disclaimer. You heard me say it tonight. I said, I'm not really a mind reader. I just imagine what a mind reader would do. Mm-hmm. And then I do exactly the same thing. And I think what that does is it is a disclaimer, I guess. And it's a non-disclaimer. And my thought today is I want to be able to do a disclaimer that other people can say he had to say that. Uh-huh. I want to be able to take the husbands that are not going to have a good time if they think I'm trying to hoodwink them.
Okay.
I want to be able to let them relax and go, look, this is just for fun. Relax. Right? I often say it's I kind of take a John Bannon line that he had with the Shriek of the Mutilated, the flash paper torn and restored on the thing. And he said it's... that Haiti is 80% Catholic, 10% Protestant, and 100% voodoo. So I say often that, you know, what I do is 80% intuition, 20%, or 80% psychology, 20% intuition, and 100% voodoo. And then they laugh. Or tonight I said 100% theater when I did the news there. I said, but it's a, you know, it is 100% theater, which kind of says... To Dad, okay, I don't have to worry about this guy. He's admitted it's theater.
Yes.
And he's admitted he's not really a psychic. He's just pretending to. But Mom says that's not what I heard. I heard him say that he was joking when he says he's not a psychic. He just does everything a psychic can do.
They hear it differently.
They hear it differently. And I think the reason I've always loved it, I started as a magician. When I was a teen, I was a professional escapologist.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. I drove my poor mother insane.
Chains and ropes and all that.
Chains, ropes, and underwater escapes. And I hooked up with a, at 16, I hooked up with a, an agency that would put me in for real estate developments. And so as they would open new apartment complexes in the Denver area, I would do, they'd have a big party, and I would do escapes from the pool.
Wow, okay.
And first I'd do a routine with the rope and, you know, stuff, and then a handcuff bit, and then I'd have the challenge act where they tied me with, quote unquote, 100 feet
rope,
of rope, which is 75 feet. I find that hysterical, right? That the trick, the trickology, the methodology of getting escaping from 100 feet of rope is that it's really only 75 feet. That's the trick.
Yeah.
Right? It's like it's like the trick in swallowing a red hot sword is you swallow the scabbard first. That's the trick. It's awesome. So, and I would do that, and blocks. I've had everything from pieces of eyebar, steel eyebar, and masonry blocks and everything. Yeah. And then I'd go down to the bottom of the pool. And then, and I was 16, pretending I was 18.
But your mom probably didn't dig that.
Oh, so I feel so bad because I'd say, like, you know, again, this was the 70s. So I'd say, okay, see you, Mom. I'm going to go to work. It's Saturday. You know, okay. Where are you going? Well, I'm opening. I'm doing my act. Which act are you doing? The fire-eating act, son? You know? No. Which I blew up when I opened for Ozark Mountain Daredevils. I had a cowboy hat on. I blew fire, and it splashed back all over me, and that was another
tale.
Get
burned pretty bad?
First, second, third degrees everywhere. The doctors were amazed that my cheeks and forehead didn't permanently scar.
Wow.
Yeah, but there's another nefarious story behind why it didn't scar. So, but it was the 70s, so I'd go off. You know, oh, the escape stuff! Oh my God! And I'd go off, and then being a goofy 16-year-old, I pretending I'm 18, and so I meet a 20-year-old girl and stay out all night.
Yeah,
and forget that my mom doesn't know what happened. Until Sunday afternoon, you know, our goofy 16-year-old son comes home. Well, I had a great big, you know, leather suitcase that I just threw chains and ropes and all that stuff.
Well, I remember when our older son, I think he was about 8 years old or so, and he was interested in escapes, and he used to say to, you know, tie me up and put this jacket, you know, my this jacket on, you know, winter jacket on backwards or something, and zip it up and you know, tie the you know behind me, and then put me in the closet and lock the door. You know? And we did, you know.
No, it was, and we did, right?
And then,
exactly.
And then we went out to dinner and came.
We
you know,
love
no,
our son.
No, but here's a funny thing. Also, what happened one time is that we were out. Kathy and I were out to dinner one time and got a phone call from. The babysitter, who was saying, you know, your son had asked about doing some escapes, and he had done some, gotten out, and so he put the some handcuffs on me, but he can't find the key. Would you happen to know where the key is so I can get out of these handcuffs?
A number 9 safety pin. That'll do double locking police cuffs, too. So that we don't get off the disclaimer thing, back to it.
Yeah.
I've loved magic all the time. I think that if I did magic and not mentalism, I would hope that I had my audience in a place where they knew I'm a magician, they know they're in a theater, but they're not certain... Mm-hmm. Whether one or two of those tricks weren't real magic.
Yeah, you want to have them.
And that, you know, that's a really difficult thing. Now, that's not going to work for a lot of quote unquote comedy performers, mm-hmm. right? There's never going to be that moment of I don't consider myself a comedy performer. I may be funny, and you know, people say I'm funny a lot, but I don't necessarily try to be
funny.
You don't
script humor in there?
It's the humor comes, and mm-hmm. it's more like situational humor,
sure.
though,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I do tell a couple silly jokes just to warm up, especially if I'm only going to do 10 to 12 minutes, you got to get in there and have them like you within the first 30 seconds. That was another Cassidy thing. But today I would say I need to give at least a disclaimer enough to make Dad at ease.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that he doesn't think that this guy's trying to pull one on him.
Right.
Or on his wife.
Sure.
You know, that he's really just a magician, and he's...
It's for fun.
Right. And I want him to be okay. On the other hand, if mom is going to have more fun thinking that that guy really does have psychic powers, then she should be allowed to feel that.
To feel that way, too. Sure.
And just like, I don't think... We want to do that for our children. I'm sure there are some people who don't want to do that for their children. There are some people that are so strictly realists that they won't allow their child. It's Miracle on 34th Street, right? That where she won't let her child know. She wouldn't let little Natalie Wood believe in Santa Claus when she was seven, right?
Right.
And so I'm sure there are parents, but you and me and most parents, we want our kids
to have that childlike wonder because you're only a child once.
That's right. And I told my daughter, I said, let's believe in everything first. And then as you grow up, we'll eliminate the things that don't make sense.
That makes sense.
And you'll be left with a lot of beautiful things to believe in. So we went ahead and believed in you know, where mushrooms sprout and they make rings. And they call those fairy rings, right? And we believed in those and all of this. And it was great. And we've had a lot of fun. So if there's a rare opportunity for an adult to feel that, whether it's a magic trick or a mind reading trick, I don't want to take that from
Let me keep on that same tangent, but apply that then to seances.
Mm-hmm.
Because when Jamie and I have done seances over the decade, that we have decided people bring their own belief system into the seance. And that's why I always open and say, for those who believe, no explanation is necessary. For those who don't, no explanation will suffice. That old thing. And that's absolutely true, because you're not going to change whatever they come in with. And, of course, there are the skeptics who come in as well. So if they really believe that this stuff is happening, they're going to continue. So regardless of whatever you say, you know, we don't even try to change. Second of all, so we don't have a disclaimer. We just say, it is what it is. You see what you see, and enjoy this, basically. I don't say this is a recreation or anything like that of you know, of whatever that we're doing. But we have also said we don't want to be like a medium where somebody is going to be speaking through us, or we're not going to necessarily bring somebody back. Well, we might, like Jack the Ripper. Anyhow, another story. But what we do is to say we're kind of paranormal we are interested in the paranormal activity, that just like ghost hunters, basically. We are ghost hunters like everybody else, you know, they're on television. So we're just trying to find out if these things exist. I mean, we have our own faith and our own belief, however, that we're open to whatever might happen. Let's just see what happens together here together, you know. And so this way that they enjoy the journey with us, as opposed to coming in. So in a situation like that, because I've heard you talk before about I've never done a dark seance, but, you know, that's a completely different kind of a thing. So what do you think about as far as trying to say any kind of disclaimers, or do you think you should before a seance?
Well, and it's a great question. I would first, and right now I actually have, I keep adding to this massive carnival of seance on my website. So it's a big, expensive package, but it's got like 8 different kinds of full seances now, and it's building to be more. So it's an experiment to see in marketing, and also whether I'll break it up later or anything. But each one's really, really different. Mm-hmm. So there's one that's completely a sideshow seance. Mm-hmm. And in this sideshow seance, it's all spirits of different sideshow performers that either appear and do their act, or take over the medium and the medium does it.
Right.
Or at one point, there's a blackout and the insane tattooed man, you hear him with you get to see the tattoo gun, the needle, the electric needle, and it turns on and the lights go out and it starts flying around the room.
Cool.
So that's already a fun house seance.
Okay, sure.
So before I get into my thought about those real briefly, I think it's really important to understand that it is a legitimate religious platform.
Still today.
Oh, deeply. And a lot of, millions in the United States.
So,
and many more in England. Many, many more in England.
Oh, I believe that, though, also. But you're talking about the kinds of beliefs that people had, like in Houdini's time when he was busting spirits.
Still I mean, afterlife spiritualism.
Spiritualism. Right. So there is a spiritualism community still, you're saying, that's alive and well and has grown since then.
Right. And very large. And almost, for the most part, devoid of any trickery or charlatans in it, that they are people who legitimately believe what they're doing, study what they do.
But some of those people have been challenged, you know, with Banachek and, of course, James Randi on the million-dollar challenge, the MDC that Banachek works with, saying, hey, if you have these kinds of abilities, you know, then bring them forth. But some people say, well, I'm not going to try to stoop to
that. Yeah, but that's and there's where it takes a left-hand turn right away, because just like you wouldn't try to shoehorn a Catholic priest into that show, he'd have no place into a million-dollar challenge. The same holds true for a spiritualist church. Is that that's their form of worship, and if...
But they believe certain things are still going to be happening. I mean, just like they did, again, Houdini's time.
Well,
don't they?
Different. They
I
hope
guess
for
I don't understand
things.
Spiritualism. So explain what the church is or what they
believe.
Yeah, it's
the
believe
same
in.
As any other church. It's the same as any...
It's a faith.
Yeah, it's a faith. It's a complete faith.
Okay, and I understand.
In different times, you know, like sometimes, for instance, you know, different sects of Christianity, mm-hmm. One may expect someone to
speak in
get
tongues.
Healed, or get healed right on the pulpit, or yes. It might be much lower, it might be much more subtle that people are praying at home for someone else to get well, and they do get well. And that's nothing that those people feel that they need to take to, you know, to that's incredible and right,
make
and,
money on, yeah,
and show that it's something that can be debunked or not. It's just a form of faith. And the same with the spiritualist community is they're not looking for so much physical manifestations these days, because they know a lot of those were tricks.
Right.
And so today, most of them are, they get together, they worship, and then they wait to hear if someone in spirit wants to bring a message to someone else. Many times there are no messages. Sometimes there are remarkable messages, and other times, and because it's a faith, you wouldn't take the medium and say, okay, now let's have her, you know, again, let's test her to see if, because it's their religious faith. Mm-hmm. So one, it's a little disrespectful to them, and I believe that any faith, certainly being an American, I believe Americans are free to worship any way they want or not at all.
Yes, right. You know? Yeah. So the way that during Houdini's time, of course, that he had things that he was debunking where they really were capitalizing and
well,
they were
well,
charlatans.
Let's not forget that he was a believer.
You know, he was. That's right. Initially, he was trying to talk to his mother.
To his mother. Yeah. And he was also about where Elvis was in the mid 70s.
Okay.
As far as being the story I heard from Orville Meyer, who, you know, was...
See the hot dog guy?
Yeah.
That's his brother Oscar.
No, he's the guy that invented the bullet catch for Animan that Penn and Teller used, that Banachek added one perfection, just one piece of modern technology that wasn't available in Animan's time that made it perfection for today.
Right.
And so that's not to take anything away from Banachek, but it was Orv Meyer's. And he's all over the jinx. But Orv Meyer was a young kid when this happened. There was a big SAM convention in New York City. So everybody was there, right?
Yeah.
And Houdini was there. And it was before he had died. And I think it was 25 or 24 or something. I don't know. I wasn't there. And the lights went out. The electricity went out. So they had to go downstairs in the hotel that they were in. And I think a young Blackstone was there, and there were anyway all the guys of the day, right, were there, and they went to the breaker box, and it was in a big screened room, like those super thick chain link fence rooms that old hotels have, right?
Seen them in the movies.
It was caged off, right? See them in the movies, caged off. And one of the magicians, I mean, we're at exactly one of those things, but that was a big dinner. Not a convention. If I say convention, I misspoke. Big dinner. And someone, one of the magicians says, don't worry. It was locked. The janitor wasn't there, but he said, don't worry. We have the great Houdini. Mm-hmm. He can just pick the lock. Well, of course, Houdini was 90% showman and 10%
real deal.
Real deal.
Yeah.
So he couldn't pick a real lock, right? And He spent 20 minutes trying to get into that thing. And they were all, first they were all huddled around him. And then one by one, they kept walking away. And pretty soon, Houdini's not giving up because he's, his career's not doing too well by this time, right? Apparently. And he's, at least the story goes. And he can't open it. And eventually, the super shows up, superintendent of the building, opens it up. And Houdini is destroyed. And all he can say is, he can't believe tomorrow's papers, what they will say. It'll be headlines that Houdini couldn't open the lock. And the next day rolls around. There are no headlines because nobody cares, because Houdini wasn't a headline at that time. And he had hit... No, this is... I'm sorry. This wasn't 25. This had to be before that because...
He died in 26.
Yeah, he died in 26, which, by the way, is so funny because I saw something for sale that was an autographed picture of Houdini, and I recognized... I know how... I have an H in my name. So as a kid, I practiced writing my H for Hilford just like Houdini did. So I know how his H looks. And they had these... Harry, weird Harry Houdini. And I go, that's not his signature. And then it's signed in 1928. So I go, it's
no way. Yeah.
How are you selling this? The guy was already dead, that's not his signature. Yeah. But anyway, what I understand
talking about
is
back in the grave. Yeah.
Yeah. So. If he came back. But that was one of the things to revitalize his career was to change from The Escapes, which was, you know, kind of played itself out.
Yeah.
And do something that was that could be topical, which was the new, because spiritualism apparently had waves of interest among people, mm-hmm. and like we saw, you know, we saw a minor wave with what's her name,
You don't mean John Edwards?
No, no, I mean Sylvia Brown.
Oh, Sylvia Brown. Yeah.
Sylvia Brown, okay. Right? What about my our missing child? He's dead.
Yeah.
You know, what a lovely lady. He's dead. Move on. Right? What a lovely lady. But I also, we're kind of getting off, but I also know that I know for a fact, that I'm completely convinced that both John Edwards and Van Patten, you know who I mean, the other number one, I'll think of it in a minute. Both of them are sincere, and they are not using clipboards or tricks or mm-hmm. anything. And they may very well be tricking themselves psychologically.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That after a period of time, you know, I mean, Banachek had told me this years ago, that if you start doing some, you know, psychic readings and everything, that before long you're going to start hitting more and more, and you're going to start to believe yourself that you actually, it's like...
Well, but so at that point, how can you prove it's not true? Hmm. Because a non-believer, right, can do the same thing. He can act like there is nothing else besides life and death.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about a humanist, right? Because a humanist believes in humanity. So, right. But something that believes in nothing and eventually keeps telling themselves that long enough that they start believing it and start seeing actual proof that there is nothing mm-hmm. anymore. And so that would be the same thing.
Well, you present that. I mean, when you do cold readings, your cold readings are awesome.
Thank you. I thought tonight was pretty good, you know. Yeah, we were hitting those. But and I have to, you know, tip
lecture?
My... thank you. And the lecture, yeah. I have to tip my hat to my childhood buddy Banachek, though, too. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it was Banachek that actually it got me 20 years ago thinking in terms of, okay, you've picked a word, now jumble the letters and pick a letter. Right. Think of that. And tonight, you know, and you do that long enough,
yes.
You can do it really well.
Well.
And that is psychic.
Well... Yes and no. I mean, there are some letters within that that might be a hard consonant or something that's a little bit different, and that's the one that sticks out.
No, you know? And we just do what we feel like we would do.
Yes.
And I did, and
usually
they
think the same thing.
I thought, I did, and I felt like I did. And then that worked. And for him, the same way with glasses. Mm-hmm. His first thought were round cartoon glasses, and then he thought, no, I wear rectangular glasses.
Mm-hmm. And so he's thinking
whether
boxes.
He knew he wore rectangular glasses, but he started changing the circles to his own glasses.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I knew. For the listeners who don't know, I had a guy on stage, and he picked a word out of a book that said eyeglasses. And I couldn't get the word, apparently. I feigned it not being able to get the word. and I asked him to draw it in his mind. And then I told him, wait a minute, did you start drawing circles? The main thing that you were drawing, and he said, yeah. And I said, but now you've changed it to like rectangles. He said, yeah, exactly.
And that's what I think is more important. The way, again, Vaynerchuk has started with that, saying it's not what you're thinking, but how you're
thinking. It's how you're thinking. If I can tell you, right, if I can lay out the process of your thoughts, then I'm in your head.
You're really in your head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I like doing that and do that a lot. So back to senses. Now we've eliminated anything that has to do with religion.
Yeah.
Okay. So now if people are coming in, they are not spiritualists. Mm-hmm. Right, so we've eliminated nobody comes to my show being a spiritualist and wanting to worship in that faith. Okay. So we've you know, for our discussion, we've eliminated that from any of our shows. Now we may have people that I would probably put you in that class, right? That don't know anything really about what a spiritualistic church is.
Right.
And so they don't know what's going to happen. You know, taking that, the rest, you're not in that class, but then they don't know what's going to happen in the seance. Mm-hmm. So they might believe that what's going on, the theatrics that's going on, might be real.
Real, right.
So what we now have in my mind is we have a bunch of teenagers sneaking into the carnival at night to go on the haunted ride when they've heard on the radio that there's an escape maniac somewhere in the area.
Okay.
So now they don't know if there's actually a maniac in that haunted ride. Mm-hmm. And it's a little spooky anyway because they're broken in after dark. And they know that the haunted ride is not real.
But
there's the slim possibility that there
something
might
real could creep
be
in.
Something real might be in there. I don't like those. I've never liked those rides.
Really?
Yeah. And why? It's because I love the rides that are all goofy, you know, with the mannequins that fall and pull back up.
Yeah.
But when they just hire teenagers
to jump out at you,
to jump out and grab you, and I know what, I've been in the carnival, I know what kind of runaway serial killer meth heads are working in the carnival, and I don't want to walk through a thing or even ride through a thing where they're going to reach out and touch me.
Touch you, right.
Because at any given moment, one guy could just wake up and snap that morning and go, you know,
okay,
this straight edge razor ain't for shaving anymore. I'm taking it to the fun house. Now, having said that, if I can bring that to that night, then I've got some. So about a disclaimer with that, I think everything's different. I don't think I would give any kind of disclaimer on the carnival, on the sideshow. Mm-hmm. I do an Ashwang, which is Filipino vampire story.
Okay.
Ashwangs are these.
How does that differ from the regular Dracula?
Oh, it's a bat-like creature that usually breaks apart at the waist so that its spine and guts are flying through the air and its legs can run around on the land. It's a very well-known, popular, scary as heck.
Ashwang. You would think they would make a movie out of that.
Oh, they have several, but they're all Filipino movies.
Oh.
Because it's a Filipino story.
Right.
And so, especially Filipinos are scared of this stuff. So now, just there, you're already interested, right?
Yeah, I am.
Right? And so now, I've got a whole seance. And so this time, we're going to sit around. This is a dark seance, so we're going to sit around a table. I'm going to tell you about the Ashwang. And then as it gets darker and darker, and we do little things to get in the mood and weird thing, pretty soon there's red eyes up in the corner of the room.
Yeah.
We're all holding hands. And then it goes dark, and you hear this thing flying around the room.
Yeah, flying.
And it starts grabbing your chair and trying to fly off with you, and you know, it's there, and there's, you know, warm drool that falls on you, and it's a horribly, horribly awful, weird seance. Now, with that...
But you like the dark seances better than the regular...
Oh, well, I think there's room for all of them.
Okay.
With that one, I had people sign disclaimers, not that it's a fake, but that a waiver, that if you get hurt, that if the Ashwang does appear and does hurt you, we have nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
That scares the hell out of them. Mm-hmm. When I did the red light seance, right, which is what used to be famous in like the book The Psychic Mafia. And in a red light seance, what happens is because the room is filled with red light, is your retina starts playing tricks on you. And the red light, it pulses in a way that you don't realize it's pulsing. Mm-hmm. And eventually, while you're sitting and watching the medium, because I'll sit in a chair like this with a little table like this, and the spirit trumpet up there, and slates, and be moving and talking, and have a slate message come in, and then start having psychic messages come in, and it's all in red light, and the red light is getting brighter, and the room is getting darker, and pretty soon the trumpet floats off and floats around their heads, and there's messages through the trumpets as I sit in the chair. And then it seems what's happening, though, Scott, is the red light is pulsing, mm-hmm. and you don't know it's pulsing. Huh. And the pulses vary in a way that starts playing a trick on your retina. And mm-hmm. your eye then eventually permanently records me sitting in the chair in the red light.
So even if you get up,
we get to a point where the room is dead black.
Yes.
There's no red light, but your eye, your retina, still sees red light with me sitting in the chair.
Correct.
And I'm up out of my chair. And that's when the tiniest little fluorescent piece turns into, I work a piece about a foot long, uh-huh. and it looks like someone's standing in the floor, full length.
Wow.
Full size.
Yeah.
Dancing and moving. Now, what I did for that, and that's startling.
Yeah.
And it's about a 90-minute seance. Mm-hmm. You know Evil Dan?
I do.
Evil Dan flipped out in that. Hmm. He said he had to keep putting eyewash in his eyes. Huh. He said because he couldn't. And what's weird is, like, if you look away, you don't still see me sitting in the chair over here. Mm-hmm. If you look in at the other wall, you just see dark. But if you look back to where you think I was, I'm there.
That's interesting.
It's crazy. Huh. And he said he thought it was a trick of his contact lenses or something. So he kept washing his eyes out because he saw this woman just appear out of light. And she was dancing and reaching around and touching people. And it's awesome. So,
had you read about that someplace, or how did you discover that?
I was taught by Dr. Richard Ireland how to do the red light. He ran a phony church. He was making tons of phony money. He was a blindfold medium.
Okay.
And did it for a lot of celebrities. So my blindfold work, I learned from him.
Yeah.
And so mine's different than most of the magic.
Speaking of celebrities, I don't mean to keep going on different rabbit holes here, but did you really, were you a psychic for Lindsay Lohan?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was the guy that said, this is going to be a good year. Thanks.
Wow. Okay.
And I worked with a couple other people, but they're on the, you know, a lot of people say, we don't want you to discuss anything. Mm-hmm. And you know, and it sounds great, but it can be anywhere from, you know, a full year of consultation to a single, you know.
Are they phone calls? You go out and talk with them personally? Or?
Well, these days, a lot of what I do personally are Skype or FaceTime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Counseling. And that's mostly just listening. So then where do you move from magic? Now we're into that stuff, and it's like, well, yeah, but, you know, lots of people like to listen. And, it you know, a well-known magician that I'm not going to name him, but he's super famous and one of the older guys. And he says, look, all these people are going to give their money to a dial-up psychic to listen. And he says, you know, why don't you might as well do it. And that's, I know that's the justification of every con man in the world. If I don't take their money, somebody else will. But I don't do that all, but still, you know, I learned from Orville Meyer, and Orville Meyer taught me, if you're going to do anything with the psychic counseling thing, you need to learn Rogerian therapy, which is a way not to give any advice at all. Which is you clarify the problem and you amplify it so they can see it better, and you reflect it back. And mm-hmm. then they tell you what you should do. And And that helps with a lot of people. And so it's just plain old counseling.
Seems like Paul Draper was talking about that. You know, there was a thing that he does where he's got a chart, and basically you ask questions, and then you repeat back what it is. In other words, that you see something here. What is, when you go out, is the water cold? When you're walking out in the ocean, is it an ocean? Is it a beach? You know, what kind of a scene? And so when they're telling you something back, you know, whether it's a lake versus an ocean, you know, and how does that make you feel? Well, I feel, you know, warm, or reminds me of something. Okay, then you just kind of repeat that in different words back to them. And so exactly what you're saying, I guess, from that.
Yeah, well, it, to simplify it, Fraser did it, and Dr. Phil does it, and it's basically, so what were you thinking?
Yeah.
Right? That's, what were you thinking?
What were you thinking, yeah.
So how's that working for
you? Boy, you got to get down perfect. That's
you it. Know? And if, it, but that's what he did. He just took it back, and he goes, so what you're saying is,
yeah.
And he just reflects it back, and then when you hear it, I've heard so many, I'll tell you, Facebook, right, now that they're caught having done everything that they've done, which is they just built a platform to scrub all the info they could from you and all your friends and everyone you know and just sell it without any. And I heard them on 60 Minutes tonight. Twice guys from Facebook go, well, it sounds really bad when you say it out loud. No, it sounds bad if I just think it.
Think it in my mind.
Because they were saying that, like, you can check a box. It says if you're giving up all your information, check a box for your friends, too. That means I can have all the information from everybody you're friends with.
And it defaults to that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he says, but if you say it out loud, it sounds kind of bad. No, it is bad. You don't have to say it out loud. So, but back to it. If you get somebody to say it out loud, a lot of times that's the end of their problem. So I'm not in the problem-solving business. I'm in the, if part of one of the several businesses I do is in the listening business. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So with the red light sounds, I had a lot of magicians there.
Yeah.
But I got to say, there is a certain feeling of pride when you can take magicians and have them crying at your seance.
Yeah.
And I thought I had these guys laughing. I thought they were laughing at me in the dark.
Yeah.
And when the lights came on and they were wiping their eyes, I was shocked. They're magicians. They're supposed to know all this. Well, it was my disclaimer that stripped that away from them. And the disclaimer I gave all the magicians, we did a special seance at Rick Ma's house years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many years ago that was. We did two different seances, red light seances. Mm-hmm. And then the next day I did a lecture on it, on what I did and everything. And that's the only time I lectured it. We should have taped everything, but it just wasn't as available as it is today. But what I had them sign is a disclaimer that said, this is all going to be 100% theater. However, it is so accurate to what was going on at a certain time, you know, in the 1940s and 50s and 60s, mm-hmm. and even back before then, but the red light specific, and in the when the old spiritualist camps were filled with frauds instead of honest people that believe today.
Right.
You've missed that era. We read about it, but you've missed it. And you'll never be able to go see a fraudulent red light seance.
Yeah.
This is your only chance. So we just ask you to sign an agreement that every time your mind tries to figure out what's going on, and your mind starts saying, "What? I wonder what the method is with this," that you fight that thought and tell yourself, no, you really believe that real spirits are here and they're going, this is all really happening.
Hmm.
And asking them to do that and making them sign a commitment to do it. And I collected all the commitments.
They're signing their willingness to suspend disbelief.
And they did. Right. They're not only agreeing, but signing a document.
Well, you know, again, that's what Jamie and I have done, you know, in which we're saying that basically we're wanting you to sign this as you're coming in, saying that if you go home and the spirits follow you home, and something happens, you know, your glasses break on a mirror, or that something happens that appears to be supernatural, that is because you believe the spirit has followed you home. It's not our fault, basically, that we're going to, you know, we're finishing here, and at the end, then we're also saying, and we're going to be videotaping also, so it's kind of a release to allow.
Right, add that on there, great.
Yeah, have that in there, too, but the first part of it is such that it's like, well, wait a minute, what is this? And so they really are starting to think that maybe there is something to this, you know, that, what do you mean they follow me home? And they weren't thinking about following me home until you actually put that thought in their mind, you know.
Well, and I think what happened with these guys, they were good magicians, and they respected me individually as magicians.
Sure.
And I think what happened is their brain, when they would start going, I wonder what the method is, they'd realize, no, wait, I agreed to not do this. And they forced themselves into this place with all the other psychological things that I was hitting them with, including things like me giving the clipboard to Rick's wife to get an answer from the magician's wife, so that I was 2.5 people away from the guy that I got the information from. So the guys that I hit with information do not know that their wives have been asked. The wives don't know that the information was kept by Tammy, and they certainly don't know that any of it was connected to me.
Right, right.
And so when they can see a spirit trumpet floating around the room, and at that point, their magician mind goes, I don't know how it's happening. Mm-hmm. And then they say, but I've agreed not to think that I have to agree that it's a spirit doing it. And it looks so good that it's easy to believe that.
Yeah.
And then it gets right in your face and mentions your grandparents or, you know, a great aunt or someone. I had no idea that I would, like, hit a string and make people cry. It's not never been my attempt, but they're magicians. They have no souls.
You know, going to wrap up here in a moment, but I remember also that you and I were out in New Jersey, and we'd gone up to Mark Salem's house for a party one evening.
Oh, that was so nice, I remember.
That was wonderful. But on the way, and I wish I had my recorder on at the time, because I'd forgotten who was driving the car. It might have been John Stetson. I don't remember. I remember Tim Trano were in the back seat. Tim Trano and I were in the back seat. You were in the front seat. And we started talking about something, and I had asked you a question, and, you know, that... you know, you took off on just some great ideas, and there were a couple of different things that you had mentioned, and they both stuck with me for the longest time. The first one I have since forgotten, and maybe that this might stimulate your memory about this, but the second thing had to do with one of the suggestions you made, which I've always remembered as being brilliant, and that was whenever that... when you're doing a show in a banquet room and that people are getting ready to wrap up, or I should say, you know, finish dinner and then introduce the speaker, and people are kind of drowsy and they're really not paying attention, and they say, okay, we need to go to the restroom or whatever, now we're going to have the magician, you know, or the mentalist, and, you know, just give a big round of applause, and they really are still talking, they're really not focused yet. And what your suggestion was is to turn the lights on the house lights full, so this way that it's like, hey, we're supposed to leave, what's happening? You know, so it changes that. Do you remember that discussion?
Yeah, very well, very well. Well, I at least I remember that, because that was something I learned from David Alexander, and David Alexander was a protege of Jose Fraxin.
Sure, yeah, the cigarette manipulation guy. Yeah,
I'm sorry.
The cigarette,
right? And Rising Cards, and a number of things. And David was the first cruise ship magician in the '60s. As we know them today.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was doing a show with David, and they introduced him, and the lights went up. And after the show, right, and he worked like that, and after the show I said, David, what, they messed you up. He said, no, I had them do that. I go, why would you turn? And he told me, because what you have is you have, usually they give the awards, then we have the awards during dinner, and then we have the
after
show.
Dinner, right.
Even tonight at the Magician's thing, they gave awards first. No dinner, but awards, and then no dinner. Hell, there was not even water or soft drinks backstage. God, no cracker. So what they hear is after a while you're eating and you have, you know, you've been to banquets and you know what it's like. After a while you start hearing rah, 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 rah. And then you hear, blah, 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 blah. And then they clap, and then the guy goes, blah, 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 blah. And you're not listening, you know, Jack,
right.
Jack
right.
Adams. Right. Thanks, everybody.
Right.
Okay. Blah, blah, blah. And so when they introduces you, it sounds exactly the same.
Good point.
Right? Scott, and everybody says they don't know to look up or that anything. So that when that happens, there's a stop and all the lights come up and they have to look around to say what it is. And there's a guy on stage, then he can do his thing. And after that, of course, he can have the lights come down and do what he wants from there. And if the lights are full, come down. So whatever it is, do the exact opposite and take control of the whole room.
Yeah,
and that was something that Dave, but it sure works. And another thing I learned, it sure works in mentalism too, but another thing I learned from David is he did not work, even though it was all manipulation, not all. The Rising Cards had some comedy, but the cigarettes were all manipulated. Little sparks, little sparks, right? He had the Mexican cigarettes so that they're loose rolled, so that when you would crunch them and roll snap a bunch of your fingers and flick all the ashes, and it looked like the sparkly fairy stuff. All these sparkles would blow out from the cigarettes that he'd produce.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
So, but I said, Dave, we can arrange for you to have some music. He goes, no, I don't work with music. And I thought, I'm afraid to not work with some music.
I agree.
But David taught me that no, and working a lot of resort hotels the last, 6 years or so, is I did one 6 week set where I didn't use, as a mentalist, I need both my hands. As a magician, you need both your hands. So we have either a headset with the little
countryman
or a lavalier, or a lapel. So both hands are free. So what I did is I said, no, I'll use a handheld mic.
Yeah.
And
like Ken Weber.
Ken Weber. And no music. So I had to learn to do the book test, right? To riffle the book test, the riffle the book, say stop with one hand, or to be able to rest it against one hand, to hold the marker in the same hand as the mic.
The mic, right.
So that I hold it in the right hand, and it's like I hold it like I'm stabbing someone with the marker.
Okay.
And then I can talk in the top of the marker, basically. I'm talking in the mic and hold the board and still say, okay, so that's 7, 2, three. And then I don't have to change things around. So I learned after that, it's like swinging with three bats. And then you come on and one bat feels good. So if I come on and do any show and they go, oh, no, we've got a place for you to plug in your mic. We have a mic.
Yeah.
We have, a place for your music. We have all that. Everything's easy after doing sets like that. So I did that only because it's been years since I've had really awful, awful. So I gave myself really awful, awful conditions and made it work really, really well.
Yeah,
and so then after that, every show is just a breeze.
That's a good analogy. That's a good way of looking at it. Yeah, with swinging with three bats. Well, listen, we could obviously go on for a long time. There are so many different avenues, and if the listeners are really enjoying this as much as I am, please write me. Let me know if this is something. I would like to come back and do another long talk with Doc. Because you got Doc Talks, I guess.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Things that are online.
Doc Talks online. They're at the official address is DocHilfordProducts.com, but it's floating right now under iEntertainer.net.
Okay.
Until I can float it back.
But there are other things. I mean, in talking about doing mentalism for trade shows and things like you've done, because, my wife is a dental hygienist, and that's where she first met you and said, oh, there was a mentalist, that was actually working the trade show that I went
to. That
was
like 1990, probably.
That was a long time ago. Yeah. Yes, it was.
Or for children. Do you know that now that there are people doing mentalism for children as a regular thing. And I was told, you know, heavily in 1990 on, you cannot do that.
Mentalism for kids, right?
Yeah, and it was like, oh, come on. It's absolutely, they absolutely can understand.
Sure.
You know, what a thought is, what a dream is, you know.
And also plus working comedy clubs. You know, I mean, I've seen Richard Ostrom work comedy clubs, and you stop and think, well, it's not funny, but yes, it is. And so, I mean, as I said, my point is there are several avenues that we could still yet go down. We just talked a lot just about the disclaimers. There were so many other things that we could.
Well, and also magic. I like talking about how magic works. I think if you love mentalists, you're a strong mentalist, and you do a piece of magic.
Yeah,
it's not so much that I want to present it as magic, like, you know, I don't want to get off on any other performers that are mixing just straight magic with straight mentalism, but we could. I love talking about how to make a straight magic trick look miraculous.
Yeah, you know, that's Banachek and I've had so many discussions early on in our friendship as we were developing as to when we were writing or psychological subtleties, you know, that I would say, well, what if you say it this way? So, well, then it becomes a magic trick. He said, I want to appear to be mind reading and mentalism, and you're trying to make it, you're thinking like a magician, I'm thinking like a mentalist. And I hadn't really thought about the two, and he really had tried to differentiate the two, and I understand that better now. And
well, it's like the linking finger rings has been kind of owned by the mentalism community.
Yeah. Thanks to Kreskin.
Yeah, or before that it was Coran. You know?
Well, yeah, yeah.
But
he started it actually, didn't he?
But he always did magic in his shows.
Hmm.
But it just got to a point where people were going, well, that's his mind.
Was it Dunninger or Animan who had talked? Did linking rings also? There was one of them, I thought.
It may have been Dunninger. But only early in his life.
Early, because I thought he was, the ploy was, you know, some magicians will use a ring that has a cut in it. I don't do that, and they throw it away.
Well, I thought Blackstone threw away the cut.
I thought it was Dunninger.
Clanged it out, clang, 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 and then began. I'll tell you what, John Henry Anderson, right?
The great wizard of the North. Yeah.
I knew his grandson, so I saw the family collection.
Hmm.
And he worked with 18 rings, and they were of different sizes. And I never knew why they were of different sizes. And here's why. Because you can lay a handkerchief over a larger ring and put a smaller ring inside of it, or vice versa.
Okay.
And you can load that ring. As you put the big ring down, you can pick up the small ring
too,
through it.
With it. Okay. Oh, through it. Okay.
Right through it.
Sure.
Because you put the big ring on the handkerchief, and it looks like you're just picking up the silk.
Yeah.
But you're stealing the smaller ring under it. There's so many awesome things.
Interesting.
But I got to say, if you can make anything look like a miracle, look at what kind of stuff did Jerry Andrus do? Was that magic? Was that mentalism? Was that it? Was
optical illusions.
That was a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah.
Well, sure, it was nice talking to you.
Here's a Doc, always with you as well, my friend. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. My question is, what would be your magic word? What is your philosophy? It doesn't have to be a word. It could be a sentence, a paragraph. You know, what is it that you live by? What is important to you that is your chi?
I believe that we really can change the world. I believe that we really can. We have the ability to change through our actions, through our thoughts, through our behavior, through our lack of action. But I believe it's only within our sphere, within our reach.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want it to be a better world, I can make it better within my own reach. And if I'm not doing that, if I'm part of the problem within my own reach, I talk to someone about that here. He goes, well, why should you give that? You go, it's not worth it for me to hold that in my heart. I'm going to let that go. Well, why should you? You know, you're right. I said, yeah, but I want my sphere to be trouble-free. It's not worth it to be upset with somebody I'd rather be wrong than have someone be so angry with me that it's hurting their life, you know?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that makes
sense.
So
I do think we can change the world as long as we do it right within our own lives, you know, right within our own reach. Like, we do it with our own kids, and we do it with our own family, and we do it with our friends, and maybe we should start doing it with the strangers we encounter. We're magicians, man. Nobody gets to meet us. We're held to a higher bar. We should be better people.
Yes, true.
Than we are.
Good point. I love it, Doc. As always, it's a pleasure. I just I like spending time with you, and it's all too rare when we get those moments. And so, thank you for
it's
your
really
time.
It's really a blessing that we do get these moments.
It really is, and I'm glad that I can capture this so I can go back and listen. Everybody can go back and listen to this.
Me too.
You know. So until next time.
Thanks, Scott.
That was Doc Hilford. Until next time, the Magic Word, this is Scotty out.
Wow. A lot of really great suggestions there, Doc. Thanks very much for sharing all those ideas. And gosh, we kind of bounced all over the place with a lot of different ideas, which, as I said towards the end of the podcast, I'm going to have to go back and listen to this. And actually, while I was editing it, I did a couple of times just because I wanted to refresh myself on some of the good ideas he was suggesting over here. So this was really great. And again, if you guys like this also, then just let me know and I can go back and we can go into a little bit deeper discussion on some of these other things about magic and mentalism and some other types of things that he was talking about. But anyhow, for this Halloween episode, I hope that you enjoyed that. It was a little bit different, certainly. And next week, we're going to be having something that's completely different, in which we'll be talking actually about children's magic. Here we were talking about something a little bit more bizarre. Next week, we're going to be talking with Mario the Magician. The Maker is another title that he goes by. And he's going to be talking about working with youth and inspiring them with creativity. And oh, it's just an amazing podcast that when we chatted, and so I know you guys are going to enjoy that then also. But listen, we've had a pretty full episode here, and I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank our sponsor, ThePerfectTrick.com. Please support our sponsor, ThePerfectTrick.com, by going and making your online purchases through their online store. They appreciate it, and we appreciate it, so this way it's kind of a nice, mutually beneficial thing for all of us. The listener wins, the Magic Word wins, and the proprietor, that's Eric Citron, over at The Perfect Trick wins then also. You get a save with some discounts by using the phrase WORD as the promo code upon checkout, and also that if you spend over $25, you get a free trick as well. It's a win-win for everybody. Anyhow, check them out, theperfecttrick.com. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and go out and change the world. This is Scotty out.